Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm grateful to have Dave Peacock on the show today. Dave is the CEO of Advantage Solutions. Well, Dave Peacock, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that we can make this work today.
Yeah, me too. I am thrilled and honored and a bit humbled that you even invited me. So I appreciate it, Lisa. This is great.
You have so much wisdom. I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you. You and I, though, connected through an organization. Well, we've known of one another for years, I think, but we really connected through an organization you and I both love.
Right.
CEO Forum. Yep. Right. And I know you would feel the same way. You feel the same way. It has been such a huge blessing for Greg and I to be a part of that organization. Amazing faith-filled leaders that are making a difference in the marketplace. And I know you feel the same way.
Very much the same way. In fact, I was down at an industry conference and was able to connect with another member who hails from Ohio, you know, and we've actually talked about in our industry, which is consumer kind of food industry, we're going to put a little subgroup together of faith-filled, like-minded leaders to have our own Bible study on a frequent basis. And Brian Walls is helping us with that. So it's just great that it's amazing when you look around and the number of folks that really rely on faith to help guide them in their work.
Absolutely. Yes. I can't imagine trying to navigate life, business, family, anything without that, Dave. But you know, so I have my little subgroup too, because I just got back yesterday morning at 1:30 in the morning from the executive women's group from CEO Forum, where Cheryl Batchelder, whom I know you know, Deborah Waller from Jockey, amazing women, came together in Tucson for a retreat. And my cup is overflowing. It truly is. So it's just a testament that, you know, it's faith and it's also community with other people.
Yeah, that connectivity with other people and being able to relate and have kind of open, vulnerable discussions around topics that we all live. It's one of the things we're actually trying to bring into our company, not necessarily faith-based, but we're going to start these moments that matter. And there's a way to bring people together, and there are topics like, you know, managing someone in your family with cancer, you know, first-time empty nesters, sending a kid to school, buying your first house, like, and then these calls that just bring people together and help them share, and they'll be facilitated. But there's so much more that kind of binds us than divides us. And it's sometimes just reminding ourselves and others of that.
I could not agree more. I could not agree more. We could probably have a whole podcast just on that, Dave. But we got a lot to talk about. But you have had just an illustrious leadership journey, and I want to totally dig into that. But before we do, I would love for you to take us back. I'd love for you to talk about your early years. What did they look like? What was growing up look like for you? Did you know that you wanted to be a leader? I would love to hear all about that.
No, I appreciate it. I grew up pretty humble background, kind of lower middle class, really well cared for by great parents, had one brother. And although he had, you know, it probably isn't formative for me. He was in the hospital for almost a year and a half and, you know, had to be held back a year. And it was a pretty traumatic time for our family. And I stayed with my grandparents for a while because my parents had to attend to him. And so that teaches you sort of at a young age, I think I was 7 or 8 years old, like, hey, you're not the most important thing all the time. Because when you're 7 or 8, you probably think you are the most important thing all the time.
Right.
But no, I never had the leadership itch. I was kind of an insecure, anxiety-ridden kid that, didn't kind of, I grew really late, you know, well, late for a kid, but I was done growing in freshman year of high school. But I grew like 6 inches in sixth grade and like 5 inches in seventh grade. So it was kind of gawky. But I was always a worker. And when I had my mind set on something, I was committed to getting it done. And I think that helped me. I'd say college was a little bit of a lost period for me just because I was less in touch with my faith and it showed and just my, you know, environment, my actions, my friends, my behavior, but kind of got re-in touch with it. And as I started working and was really blessed to, you know, work in an agency to start and then move my way up through Anheuser-Busch and onto a bunch of other things. But I leadership happened to me. And I think we have these defining moments in our lives. And a lot of them are by our decisions, having a child, getting married, and some happen to us. And sometimes leadership is, you know, you don't know you're a leader until you're kind of thrown into the crisis and you have to become one.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's really good advice. Well, now you've been a serial C-suite executive for brands such as, and we're going to talk, I'm not going to go back to Anheuser-Busch, but you were at Anheuser-Busch, I think, for like 20 years, and you were the president for the last 3 or 4 years, and you went to Schnucks, and you were the CEO, COO president there, Continental Grain Company in New York, and now you're the CEO for Advantage Solutions, and I really want to spend time there because I want our listeners to understand more about Advantage and what you guys do. But what are a few, would you say, Dave, of the leadership lessons that no matter what organization you've been in, you've carried those leadership lessons through?
Yeah, I think and you do learn along the way, right? And you and I think both agree you collect kind of wisdom, if you will, through experiences, and you never stop. And so one of the things I love is just learning all the time. I look at these roles as opportunities to learn both about yourself and about others, and how organizations can thrive. But I have learned. I think I tell people a lot. You know, leaders ask 2 questions and answer them, which are: if not me, then who? And if not now, then when? And I think it's really important to ask yourself in certain situations as you're coming up, when it's a project or maybe a different role that has you a little uncomfortable, or changing jobs to a different company, even asking yourselves those questions. Asking yourself those questions when you're in a church group, if you're watching your kids play basketball or soccer, and like, well, wait a minute, maybe I should be a part of that leadership and coaching and getting involved. So. And sometimes not. I don't know the rules of soccer, so my answer with that was no. If not me, it's that guy because he knows the rules of soccer. But
it's funny.
But a lot of times you answer it, you know, in the affirmative, and I think you can model to your kids what leadership looks like when you do that. So mm-hmm. I think questions are really important. They speak to urgency, they speak to action, and they speak to accountability.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is so good. And you spurred something else in my brain, even things in your community, right, yeah. Dave? When you see a gap, when you see something that needs to be done,
right.
Why not you? If not you, you know, who? And if not you, you know, when? So,
right.
You know, I mean, I can just think so much in my own life. And you do have to use wisdom. Because I always say when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else because right. We've got limited energy, we've got limited time. But yeah, I would say when you see those gaps, don't discount that maybe it's you that's supposed to fill the gap.
That's right. That was involved. I mean, one example was when I was between jobs. I was investing in businesses and playing entrepreneur and saw that we were going to lose our NFL team, which is, you know, not the most critical thing in the world. There's a lot bigger challenges people face, but it was a blemish on our community. I'd grown up in St. Louis. It was a part of who I was and very defining for me. So really started kind of managing and finagling to get appointed by the governor to help lead the task force to try to keep the team. And I always said, you know, we'll either get a team or much needed funds. And while the NFL left and there was a whole long process and what have you, with a legal action and settlement. I mean, the region got $790 million. And so that was a great example of saying, you know what, this team's just going to leave and we're going to be left in the lurch. And we were able to step in with a lot of other people helping and create resources, which now people are fighting over, but
right.
Resources, but you know, once those get settled and used hopefully the right way, they can really make a difference for people.
And they can lift our region for sure. So yeah, I know that about you, and I appreciate that you didn't just stand on the sidelines and wait for someone else, but leading the charge there. What would you say, Dave? I mean, I could put words in your mouth, but I want to hear it from you. I think I know, but like, what would you say your leadership style is?
Well, I have the leadership style I aspire to. And so okay. And you can appreciate this more than anybody. I'm in a couple of Bible studies outside of even CAO Forum. And I always say the best leadership book in the world is the Bible. Just read it. And even for those who have a different belief system and you just look at it as stories, there is no better leadership book. And you know, Ecclesiastes is a great example of that. But we do a word every year that we work on. And a good friend of mine started using acronyms because it's cheating. And so my word for this year, I think it really does wrap up kind of how I want to lead. As I've been in this role 2 years, I was much more thoughtful around it. And it's poppy. And there was, well, that's a weird word, right? It's a Spanish word for father. But it also is an acronym with pause, awareness, patience, and intentionality. And so many times we don't, and I fumble into this all the time, you're just so busy in the action in the moment. Sometimes you just, when things are going on, you need to take a pause, make sure you're really aware of and coming from curious around what's going on. Why is this happening? Why is this person doing this? Or why is this situation occurring? Be patient sometimes as far as how you're going to respond, because sometimes it's letting things come to you and leveraging your faith a little bit that, you know, things can in ways work out, but also being intentional when you take action and convicted around it. So that is something I've been thinking about quite a bit this year, as far as how I want to lead. But, you know, if I had to boil it down to one word, I'd say it's intentionality. And that's trying to live every day and lead with intention as far as, I mean, I pray briefly before meetings. I do things to be really intentional in the moment as much as possible. Because I think people deserve that.
I agree. Well, I'm just thinking, be intentional with every moment we're given and our words that we say. Dave, yeah. I mean, the words that we say, and I know you've got examples of this, and I do too, where somebody may have said something over me that changed even the trajectory of that day. Yeah. And we can be that for other people, right? We can be that for other people. Wow. We could probably spend a whole podcast on that too. I think we're going to have to do part one, part two, part three. Let me ask you this, because I know this is so important to you and you've really just kind of spoken to it. I think with your poppy, and really it filters down, but like culture is so important, right, Dave? Can you speak to maybe some of the culture, and you don't have to do every one of them, but what were some of the cultures of the organizations that you've been a part of, and were they different before you got there?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like Anheuser-Busch, where I quote unquote grew up from a career standpoint. Actually, you know, I'm going to go further back actually. A formative culture for me actually was when I played high school football, the public high school. We were the first class with desegregation. So we had kids from all over, kind of thrown into a big pot, if you will, but said, hey, go become a team. And I'll never forget, you know, very little was expected of us. And we ended up 11-2 semifinals in the state, number 3 behind 2 nationally ranked teams, and one who had the player of the year. So really surpassed expectations, but it was in the day-to-day relationships, having each other's back, and routines and process that we followed. I remember the coach at the banquet said, first team I ever had that started calisthenics and warm-up before the coaches got out there. And so we had the joy to this, but that was like, well, that's what we do. This is how we start practice, and it's time to start. So we just sort of had this way of working. Anheuser-Busch was an incredibly winning culture, an incredibly competitive, I think, mostly in a good way, sometimes not, in a good way. Before we got sold, market share was our driver, and it was a work hard, play hard, and great camaraderie kind of team environment. I'd say after we were acquired, it became difficult and it was challenging. And I was there about 4 years, and you just had a lot of challenge. I remember telling the CEO of the global company, I said, the biggest fear I have is we become too large and bureaucratic, which you could say happened a bit, because Anheuser-Busch, as big as it was before we were bought, just had a closeness in the community to it that was different. And then I'd say Schnucks was amazing. And frankly, one of the greatest experiences of my life was managing in a grocer during the pandemic and seeing the very best of people and watching the day after, quote unquote, it started. If we all kind of remember that mid-March, 30% of our folks didn't show up for work and our traffic almost doubled in the stores. But the people who did show up were just, to me, incredible. And the customer outpouring of affection for our frontline teammates. I always remind people, I say, don't lose the lessons that were learned during the pandemic, whether you're out of your house and the adaptability you had to learn, the grit and just the appreciation for small things and people, things that don't get appreciated usually, was just a really kind of magic experience that I'll always hold close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, it was terrible because people lost their lives, right? Lost loved ones, but there were so many good things. I think we all learned to show each other a little more grace.
Yes.
You know, a dog starts barking in the background or a child comes. I mean, you know, we just, I don't know. I think there were many, many things that brought about in humanity that were good. Good.
No, in a blessing, we only lost one teammate during the whole crisis, which out of 16,000 was remarkable, or 14,000. But I remember the first time we had a case in a store. It was a U City store. And, to panic, there's no masks. This is pre-mask. This is, and this is sort of like people don't know what's going on. You know, you get cleaning crews to come in, all this stuff. And I remember going to the store. I said, look, I need to be there because this is a group that's rocked and scared and nervous, and that's a small example of answering those two questions. If not me, then how and when, when is happening? And so you show up, and teammates acknowledge that and appreciated it. But it's kind of what you're supposed to do as a leader. Of course, we learned that most of the cleaning we were doing was irrelevant and was airborne. All these things, but
right,
it was scary for people. So. Yeah, I just saw leadership show up in so many people that answered those two questions during that moment. And just, I could rattle off a dozen names of people that just were incredible. And not all C-suite, a lot of frontline leaders who were incredible.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome. Well, let's talk about this a little bit. You stepped in as the CEO of Advantage Solutions in 2023. I would love for you just to tell our listeners about it a little bit in case they are not familiar, because I know you guys have 70,000 employees, you're a multinational company. Tell them a little bit in case they don't know. And then I've got some questions around that.
Yeah, I will say the Intel inside, we're kind of the unknown force within largely the fast moving consumer goods space. We don't do as much with like furniture and things that are, large durable goods, but, We do selling for companies. I mean, if you think about the market and retail and where we shop, a lot of companies will say, hey, I'm going to devote my resources to the largest retailers. Who's going to handle the long tail? Well, that's us. We can do that at scale and do that and drive efficiency. We do a lot. We're one of the, if not the largest supplier of labor to the consumer sector. And it's called third-party labor. But we'll do a lot of the, what I'll call episodic tasks, in stores. Again, people don't see and feel all the time, but those shelves get reset with new products every 6 months, every 4 months, depends on the category and the retailer. We're the ones behind the scenes doing that because the clerks are checking you out and taking care of you at the front end. And then we're also the ones making sure like branded companies like Unilever and Mars and other great companies, that the products are there and available when you need them, you know, and supporting the stores. Because people think the clerks bring all that out, but they've got a lot to deal with, and they can't always. We handle a lot of that work, and then we're the largest sampling company. So one of my favorite parts of the business is if you get a sample in Costco, it's our teammates. Target, if you get a sample at Walmart, if you get a sample at Kroger or Albert, any of these retailers, it's our teammates that are doing that. And that's a service to both make people aware and have them try new products, which can kind of stimulate sales. So a lot of people don't know about us. We're a little unknown, which is fine. We're business to business, but it's a service business, which means we get to serve. And one of our principles is serve with heart. And so it's one of the things I love about the business.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It really is. But, you know, I bet you there's going to be listeners that aren't familiar, but now they are. Now they are. Well, let me ask you this. And I know one of the things that you did, I know that the company was headquartered in California. And you moved the headquarters to St. Louis, thank you for that. Then we needed that. What did the first 100 days look like for you, Dave? I mean, coming into an organization, having not been part of it, you know, there may be listeners out there that are like thinking about stepping into a role. And what'd you do? What were the first 100 days like?
I will tell you, it was really hard because the company had a really bad year the year before, had seen profitability decline over 20%. There's a bit of a turnaround. This was a company that was a byproduct of acquisitions over time in a primary sector, which is a sales business that we provide support for CPG companies, but then started going into other different areas and all in pursuit of growth and all with the right intention. But it was very kind of siloed and separated and lacked cohesion and had just suffered this really rough year. And so the first 100 days were getting to know people first, right? Right. It's all about, you know, who the people, who the leaders. We did have to make some changes, which is always difficult. But getting kind of an assessment. I always say, don't go in thinking you know all the answers. You know, really dig in and understand both outside in from advisors, but also inside the company. And what it led to was really going from a federated group of companies to an enterprise and having a shared service team that supports three business units versus finance and five parts of the business and HR and eight parts of the business. And, you know, with all these different policies and no movement across the organization. So we've implemented and built a lot of those systems. And it was through that first 100 days that you learn where the opportunities. But also, I'd say year one was establishing culture. What are the things that exist within this business that are just gems, and how do we bring those out across the organization? So people first, serve with heart, lead with insights, win together. Some of this language had existed before, and some was language we found through talking with people in the company that we said, we are people first. That's what we do. We provide, a big part of our business is providing labor, you know, so well. So we have to be a people first organization. What does that mean? You know, and how do we define that and hold ourselves accountable to it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, if I were to presume something, I'm like, I bet you Dave went for a listening tour. I bet he just went in and started listening to people and not coming in there thinking you have all the answers because we don't, right? When we come into a situation like that, but just talking to the people and seeing what the challenges are. But I was thinking as you were talking too, I'm sure you had to do a lot of cheerleading, casting vision, Dave, because morale was probably not great. When you're not winning, that does not feel good.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it was giving people a roadmap to what winning can look like. And, you know, we're in a tough market right now, a tough environment. I mean, I've been sending some notes to my leadership team, making sure they understand the context of what, you know, some of our clients are dealing with, customers. You know, Kroger recently announced 200 layoffs and Walmart's trimming executive leadership. And I just read Starbucks is laying off 1,100 people, and Ibotta, which is a tech company sort of in our space, just laying off 8% of their work. So there's a lot of challenges with GLP-1 drugs, reducing consumption and inflation and all these things. And I said, guys, that's all opportunity for us. We can approaches. Again, ask yourself questions. Do I follow the path of woe is me and complain about it? And, or do we say, no, how do we solve some of these problems for people? You know, we reduce the cost of food because the services we provide are more efficient than what people can do themselves. Then we need to lean into that. And
always I love that.
People motivated around what is the purpose and what is the differentiator we can provide in helping whatever the situation might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instead of looking at it as doom and gloom, there's an opportunity here.
And there's another side, right? You're going to have
Yes.
I'm a massive Notre Dame football fan. My son went there. My wife went there. And following that team this year was great. You know, they great win first game. Everybody's excited. Second game, upset by somebody that shouldn't have beaten them at home, first home game. And then they rattle off, 13 wins in a row to get to the national championship. And it was being humbled and saying, like, there's another side to this and treating every game like a playoff. And just saying, guys, there's another side. Let's keep working on our foundational capabilities. Let's keep serving with heart, putting people first. And as things turn, we're positioned well to win.
Yeah. Oh, that's gold. That's gold, Dave. Well, we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dave Peacock on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Well, Dave, this has been so much fun. I feel like I've got, I feel like I've got a mini MBA just talking to you for this 23 minutes here. But I do have a few more questions for you. How do you, and I think this is always kind of hard for a leader, but how do you balance short-term performance with long-term strategic growth?
Yeah, it's interesting. We had our first strategy offsite as a company a couple of weeks ago here in St. Louis. And I learned from the, we have a combination of people who are newer, been here a couple of years, and then people who've been here longer. And the folks who'd been here longer said they've never done this. And I'm like, well, you have to do this. This is incredible. We have to step back. And we heard from people, and I always called, let's have an outside-in session first and then formulate some of our thoughts. And let's think, what do we see the world looking like in 2030? And then how do we make strategic choices to meet that? And so really, really important is part of the work. And then you really do surround yourself with great people who are on top of, I think, day-to-day details. And that's been a big part of our work over the last 2 years, is just ensuring we've got, really good people with the right culture, but also the right mindset. And we always say mindset, skill set, and heart. You know, do they have the mindset to continuously improve and come from curious and challenge ways of working to do things even better, and then the skill set to implement and execute that, and then the heart to do that in a compassionate and a way and in a very kind of service oriented way. So, it's I do have a lot of routines. I live by them. I have my I call it 3-in-1. What are the three important things I have to do the next day, and what's the one most important? I put them in my notes every night. And then I do my 3 done wells and what could I've done better as well. So that is sort of my short-term day-to-day, making sure I'm kind of
do that every evening.
I feel like I would need to be moving the ball down the field, yard by yard, but at the same time, you want to win the season. And so what does it look like? And,
so good. What a great practice. I love that. Your 3 done wells and your 3 things that you need to do the next day. And what you didn't say to me, Dave, is you're going to get 20 things done. I mean, you might do that, but I mean, really, I always say you can't necessarily boil the ocean. And I don't think that we should expect ourselves to get it all done. But if you pick the most important things, I think personally, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think that's one of the tenets of good leader too, is having that discernment of what is really the most important, because there's a lot of good things out there.
That's right. And I think, I said, I have to start it with myself before I can really drive that within our organization. But it's a good friend and a coach who's taught me that if you can get your top three things done every day, 90% of the time, you're probably more effective than 99% of the people. And because it's so easy for us to get distracted, and some of it's personal. I mean, sometimes it's go visit my parents who are aging and my mom has fighting cancer. Sometimes it's, you know, very much long-term business. Mm-hmm. And so, nope, this thing needs to get done tomorrow for the business. So, you know, but I try to discern and pray about a little bit. What are those three things each day? And then I read them in the morning and just to remind myself and check the day, like, have I done these things? And
right. That is so good. Talk about it in an intentional life. I love it. I love it. Well, let's talk technology just a little bit. Because technology partners, obviously, we're interested in technology. How is Advantage leveraging technology to drive growth, enhance efficiency? What kinds of things are you guys doing?
Oh, a ton. I mean, it's, you know, one of the first people I hired, and ironic, you'll get a kick out of this. We did not have a CIO when I started. So we had technology embedded in different parts of the business with no leader. So I brought in someone out of retirement who's really, really good and has a lot of experience, who's built a great team. And it's not just the tech team. It's also your business unit leads. They have to buy into changes.
Absolutely.
And I love now that, you know, we've deployed Power BI to, you know, our 1,000 key account managers who then are using dashboards that are supplied by our data analytics group that brought in a great woman, Jo Ohazo, with a ton of experience as a chief data officer. And Kat, you know, we've improved our purchases from syndicated data sources so that we have real-time fast analytics and can make decisions in the moment, which is great. And then we're leveraging AI for, you know, staffing and scheduling in parts of our business that we didn't do before, which is actually resulting in thinking people first. How do we get people more hours? Because one of the complaints I had going out is I can't get enough hours at your company. And so we had 120, 130, 140% turnover in places and said, well, we should be able to solve this. And so it's kind of reimagining how we've managed our labor, but we need technology to do that. With 70,000 people and 70 million labor hours a year, we need technology to help us manage the complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could not agree more. And I always say, if you don't have a technology strategy, if you're not using the emerging technologies such as Gen AI and these kind of things, Dave, it's going to be almost impossible to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. There's small wins too. I mean, our HR team using it on job recs and mm-hmm. our comms team, which have the first draft of almost everything they do is coming out of Gen AI. And then, like I said, the machine learning around staffing and scheduling that we're able to do across the entire labor platform. And, you know, just countless examples. And we've built the data lake with the full cloud migration and invested in that. And have put a, you know, pretty significant investment in the technology to make sure that we're as kind of forward thinking as we can be and have the flexibility and nimbleness to kind of move and adjust as the market changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so good. I love it. And I hope our listeners out there will understand that you can't ignore that. And I love what you said too about giving time back, because at Technology Partners, I mean, we're drinking our own champagne. Obviously, we are doing this for clients and putting the AI road mapping together, but really it is infiltrated in just about every function within our company. And I know, Dave, that sometimes people say, oh my goodness, you know, it's going to replace human beings. No, it's not. It's not going to replace human beings. I said, what it's going to do is give your human beings time back.
Yeah. Well, it's a great example. I tell people, and I'm going to butcher these numbers a little bit, but it's directionally correct. So in the 1900 kind of turn of the century, I think is when they looked at this, like 70 or maybe 60% of people were involved in the production and distribution of food in the United States. That's down to 2. But everybody still has a job for the most part. So the market and the opportunities that come, and we're a labor provider, so we're leveraging technology to provide labor in a better way. But I always say there's a bit of a moat around our business because the labor we provide can't be replaced by robots or things because of the nature of what we do. So, but technology can help us do it better and more efficiently and actually get people a better experience. And we talk about the teammate experience all the time when they work with us. So totally agree. And I find that it will only unlock more opportunities for people, as you've seen with as other, you know, think of the percentage of the population that was in the rail industry that's not in the rail industry anymore. You know, back in 1910, they're off doing other things. They're doing working in sustainable energy. They're working in technology. I find people are incredibly resilient, incredibly curious, and find, you know, the work and the ingenuity kind of come together to create opportunities for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really good. I love that analogy too about how the percentage that were in food production and now it's down to 2%, which is, but people are still working, right? So right. I love that. Well, let me ask you this. What, let's get into a little bit more personal insights here. You know, I know that you're a big fan of structure. You've already kind of talked about it, right? With football and, you know, the practicing and the calisthenics and that sort of thing. But tell me about your morning routine.
Yep.
And how do you believe that it has impacted your success as a leader, as a dad? Because you've got kids, you're a husband to Jane, you're a community leader. How does that morning routine impact you in all those areas?
For me, it's critical just because I know probably mood-wise, I have to do certain things to, and my assistant, Krista, is amazing. So I do block time. So I get up between 6 and 7, usually closer to 6:30 and 7 probably. And I actually have a morning routine around my faith, which is really important to me because it's just about centering and being present and feeling the power that is, you know, beyond me. That's in the perspective, right? Around what's going on. And then quickly, some days I'm hitting cardio workout right away. Other times I may have breakfast and then work out. I'm always kind of reading because I want to say, like, what are the topical things? I try to send a lot of stories around to my leadership team just to they get a sense of what I'm thinking about. But more importantly, that I think it's great. I learned it when I was at Continental Grain of just sort of opening our minds up to what's going on in the world because it's so easy to get caught up in our own space, if you will. And then, but like I say, I try to do some form of exercise every morning, maybe take one day off. And then I hit the ground running and like anybody else, you know, you've got the series of calls.
With those three intentions.
Well, my intentions. But you know, I'll tell you one thing I do is I do look a week back and 2 weeks forward every weekend. So every weekend I try to look back a week. And I look at the color blocks because Krista's super organized around my schedule. And I look at 2 weeks forward and how can I spend my time better? You know, and I feel like it's a never ending process to improve. But I'll send her emails on the weekend that she doesn't have to deal with till Monday. But just, hey, let's move this. Let's not do this. How do you spend your, you know, there are a lot of ways to make money. And to this day, outside of, you know, having children, I haven't found a way to create time in the sense of like for a human being, like you don't in how we spend our time, you know, and invest our time is really important and both personally and professionally. So try to be intentional around that every weekend of this assessment and making sure that we're thoughtful around that.
Greg and I do the same thing, Dave. I love it. You know, Saturday mornings, every Saturday morning, we're doing that. And I feel like if I don't have that time on the weekend to really recalibrate sometimes, because sometimes you have to recalibrate, you've gotten off track a little bit. Things just go better when we do that. So I do know this because I read this somewhere. I think you eat blueberries every day, don't you?
I eat sausage and either chicken sausage or pork sausage and blueberries every morning, every single morning with half of a energy drink. Cause I won't drink a whole one. Just get sick. So I'm a part of routine and my wife in front of me, but I literally, and this isn't, I've never revealed this. I set out my supplements in two paper plates in the morning. Cause I cook two different types of sausage on them every morning, every night before the next day. And my wife was even making fun of me that, even on Saturday, I'm like, yep, I just that's my routine. So
I know. I love it. I do. I love it. I think it's really, really important. Well, you've already talked about this. I was going to ask you about your faith and how it, but I think you're like me. It's everything. It's everything. McKinsey, or I think it was Bain & Company a few years ago, Dave came out with a study and it said it was polling people. And what is the most revered trait that you admire about a leader? And it came down to centeredness was the number one thing. And so I always say that spending the time in the word, plugging into a power higher than me, is how I get centered. And other people may do that in a different way. But when I think about centeredness, it's like, that person, that leader's going to be more consistent. They're not going to be like this. People aren't going to come in and go, oh, I wonder what she's going to be like today. You're more, I think you live more by principles then. So I know you would say the same thing, but I know that this is really important to you. You prioritize people. Yeah. You prioritize people in every role that you've been in. You just said that with advantage and how you guys show up in the world. Cheryl Batchelder was just telling me that Chick-fil-A is rolling out this whole curriculum, Dave, right now about love.
Wow.
Loving your people, and then your people are loving the people in the community. Yeah. How does that resonate with you?
I mean, I think it's great. I mean, it's what I talked about in the outset around these moments that matter. I think it's such a critical manifestation of the experiences we all have and the fact. And we did this at Chinooks a bit during the pandemic. And, I remember bonding with certain assistant meat managers and folks that were on these calls that were completely different socioeconomic reality and background and experience and, in some cases, different race and different, he'd come from somewhere else, they moved to St. Louis from somewhere else. But we found incredible bonds through experiences we're like with our kids or things that we'd gone, endured together. So I'm passionate about putting that out there for our teammates, because I think what happens after a year or so when people figure out one that they can join and just talk and share, and they realize, hey, we created an hour for you to bond with teammates, and you'll connect with people you never thought you'd connect with, and on topics that are very personal. We've got a number of folks fighting cancer in our company. My mom is well, and so I'm able to talk about that, and looking forward to sharing that in that experience, because there's as difficult as it's been, it's amazing examples of leadership and sacrifice. My father really caring for her every day, and just how much he pours himself into that. And there's I think in sharing that, one, showing vulnerability, but two, reinforcing how important those are, the things that matter. Again, how you're spending your time. He's spending his time in his latter years of life serving his wife. And you can make all the money and do all the things and take all the trips, but that's what it comes down to. I remember telling someone, visit my grandma who lived to her 90s and had a lot of just Alzheimer's and what have you. But I remember I grew up staying with her for a while, but by the time at the end of her life, she was in a facility, Lee Groves, and the only thing that was hers was her nightstand. And I said, you come in this whole life and you collect and assume and amass all these things, and eventually it comes to that. So it helps you really get perspective of what's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the stuff, and it's the moments together and the relationships that are what you're going to remember and hold dear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that moments matter. That's so good, Dave. That's so good. Well, I would love for you to tell our listeners one thing. I know something about you. You told me something before Christmas that you did, and I was so moved by that and so touched by it. You wrote love letters to your people.
Yeah, no, I'm not to be Jimmy Fallon. I do a lot of thank you. I do handwritten thank you notes every week and notes just to people about whatever, and to my leaders, I've sent letters, just because I'm a writer. I was a journalism major, but I did 15 of them last, I think, or so 10 or 15 yesterday. And so I try to, but one, it's old school. I think people like getting something like that. And, mm-hmm. And sometimes it's frontline folks, sometimes it's some executive level who's done something that I say it should be position agnostic, but people are putting a lot of time and they deserve that acknowledgement. And I always tell people, you know, at one point someone said something in our company, you know, well, we don't have a lot of money for recognition programs. I'm like, a note card is pretty small. I mean, just take the time. If people know you spent time and you thought of them, whether it's about acknowledgement or just, hey, you're going through something difficult.
Thinking about you.
Yeah,
I think it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And you never know when that might be, honestly, the only encouragement like that someone's ever received. And they will treasure it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I've written them to my kids. I haven't given them to them because they're on my computer.
Yeah.
Happens to me. I want them to have this. I've done it before where I've given them a letter, but it's almost the Army tradition, you know, when the soldiers went off to D-Day, especially they had letters written home just in case they were killed in action. And not that I'm morbid and worry about that all the time, but life is temporal. And, you know, you want to make sure you're imparting some things, even after the fact. And mm-hmm. I know people have gone through, they're losing a parent or a loved one, and they've cherished those things that they can hold on to.
Right. Now I've done the same thing. I did letters to my parents. I've done letters to our children at various points. And, but you really inspired me. I want to do it even more, Dave. And I would say to our listeners, if this is kind of pricking a piece of your heart and you feel like that prompting to do that for somebody, don't delay because we just never know. We're not promised tomorrow. So let me ask you this. Growth as a leader. There's no doubt it's important. We've got to keep evolving. You said that at the very beginning of the podcast, that you're a learner.
Yeah.
Are there books besides the Bible? And I completely agree with you. It's the greatest leadership book on the planet. Relationships. I mean, how you lead. I mean, I think about the stories of Moses and how he led the Israelites. I mean, there's so much richness there. But are there other books, podcasts, anything like that, Dave, that you would recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, I've listened to some of David Rubenstein's interviews with leaders, which I think has been good. He's this really probing. It was funny for a guy who's a private equity, a guy who formed a private equity firm. He's a really good kind of interrogative, you know, host. I mean, he's and funny at the same time. So he does a good job of coaxing out a little personal, but also really getting to the heart of some of what makes them great leaders. And then, you know, the chairman of our company is a guy named Jim Kilch, who was a famous CEO in our industry for years. And it's great to be able to work with him. I spoke to him yesterday, and he wrote a book called Doing What Matters. I think it's great. It's really just basics around the company and sort of how to look at the company. Jim Collins, Good to Great, of course, is one for me that has always been great, and was able to meet him on a few occasions when I was at Anheuser-Busch. And then I'm reading The CEO Cycle right now, which is just a book about the cycle that we all go through. Or a leader that, but especially CEOs, because I'm learning. I always tell people, but I'm a first time CEO. So I do not have the playbook, and it's, I'm kind of figuring it out as I go, and I'll learn from anyone I can, you know. I've got a few former CEOs on my board who are great mentors as far as just how to think about, things and give great perspective. That's
mm-hmm. the most important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. One more thing, and then I want to talk about something extra. You and I have talked about this, and I know that you and Jane are really big on giving back. You've served on lots of boards. Let me ask you, what is your giving philosophy? Why is it important? Maybe if there's a listener that says, well, I've never really been big on giving back time, talent, treasure, you know, what advice would you give to them? What's your philosophy on giving?
And it evolves, right? I mean, when I was fortunate enough after leaving Anheuser-Busch, we had some resources. I was very kind of focused on St. Louis. I was involved in this, you know, and survived the sale of the company, but it was a blow to St. Louis. And anyone who lived here knows that Anheuser-Busch kind of being bought by a global company, and it sent these signals and shockwaves, if you will. So I felt, boy, I need to do things to give back. So we focused on some of the institutions around the city. The St. Louis Arch was one. We've always been involved with the Urban League, but and their headquarters is another one. My wife's been involved with the Center of Creative Arts. We're very big arts fans and like, you know, dance and theater and what have you. And then we were really intentional around our kids. You know, we donated to each of our kids' schools because we thought they were so critical in helping their formation. Our kids went to Catholic schools and all went to three different schools, which made things always a little harder. But
yes.
Academy, St. Louis U High, and Chaminade. But really important in their formation. And so we thought it was important to give back to those schools. And then I'd say at another level, we've done that with the University of Notre Dame, where my wife, her sisters went, my son went. It's a special place to me. Even though I didn't go to school there, it's just different. And you feel God on that campus. And not that everything's perfect, but you just, it's different. And there's that is powerful. But then it's just a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, Mission STL, which is an organization that helps people kind of find their way after maybe serving in prison, and Concordance Academy. And I mean, just so many organizations doing great work that have pulled in our hearts for different things. That my wife's own, the bookstore where she works, Novel Neighbor in Webster Groves, is Noble Neighbor, which is they have author visits at school, underprivileged schools, and donate books. And oftentimes the books that these kids are getting is the only book they own.
Mm.
And so we've been involved in leaning into that as well. So, you know, a lot of what we've done has been St. Louis centric, because this is the community where we've grown up and raised our kids. And we, you know, you put your name on some things, like my old high school stadium, because I knew more than anything, because I went there, my mom went there, my brother went there, my niece went there, my sister-in-law went there. My dad was a massive booster, and I kind of did it more for him. It was one of the years it was being built, and a very proud moment for him later in life. So, but a lot of things we just do because they're things that we think are meaningful and pull at our heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember you telling me something along the lines, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but you said, you know, I don't want to leave anything on the table. I want it at the end of my life. I want to have used it all up, you know, my time, my talent, my treasure, everything. I want to use it up for the betterment of the world, right? For the good of others and the glory of God.
That's right. I mean, and we always said we'll leave some to our kids, but they're off with their careers because they're older and doing a great job. And I think it's important to have to kind of create your own a little bit. And then we've got a big chunk we're giving away. And just because, you know, and we'll be giving away after we're gone, because I think it's just important. It's not ours. It's temporal, like we talked about. There'll be a day when all I have is a nightstand.
Oh my goodness. Well, let me ask you this. This is called Something Extra.
Yeah.
What do you believe, Dave, is the something extra that every leader needs?
I'm going to use the word, and it kind of steals from, I think it steals from Good to Great a little bit, because in that book, Jim Collins talks about humility and will. But I'm going to say will, and I think will can mean a lot. I think will is that extra that want to get you out of bed when maybe you're tired and don't feel like it, and it's that just a little bit extra that you put into something, whether, and it can be a relationship, it can be time with teammates, it can be, but having the will to do that, even when it's, and sometimes it's making the decision that's unpopular but necessary. So I use the word will, because in my case, it's founded and grounded in faith. At least I try. You know, I hope it is. But I think it's really important, because it's what underpins some of the actions when things are either difficult or challenging, or you just feel like doing something else that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Out of 330 some odd guests, you're the first one that has said that.
Okay.
I love it.
Feeling it from a book too.
So. I love it. Aw. Well, Dave, this has been so much fun. I so appreciate you. I cannot wait for our listeners to hear from you. And I know it's going to help them. It's going to help them in their personal lives. It's going to help them in their leadership journeys. So I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today.
I appreciate that you do this, because I think that you put your heart out to so many people and have touched and impacted more people than you have ever imagined. So. Really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.